On the 250th anniversary of the birth of Ludwig van Beethoven, I, Patricia Salomone, present Beethoven, His Life and Times, with the assistance of my friend Gerald Fennec for the musical content. Early in 1822, Beethoven wrote that he intended composing some string quartets, and when he least expected it in November of the same year, he received just the commission to suit his desire. It came from Prince Nikolai Borisovich Galitzina, who lived in Vienna, and knew the music of Haydn and Mozart. Galitzin played the cello and his wife was an accomplished pianist. In fact, the prince wrote thus to Beethoven from St. Petersburg. Being a passionate amateur and an admirer of your talent, I am taking the liberty of writing to you to ask you if you would be willing to compose one, two, or three new quartets. I shall be delighted to pay you for the trouble, whatever amount you would deem adequate. Beethoven was more than pleased to accept the commission and requested 50 ducats for each of the three quartets, which we know as Opus 127, 130 and 132. Prince Galitzin was an intermediary in the sale of a copy of Beethoven's choral work Missa Solemnis to the Russian court, and it was through him that the first performance of the work took place in St. Petersburg in April 1824. In gratitude, in 1825, Beethoven dedicated his overture, The Consecration of the House, to this august patron.
Thank you.
As for the string quartets requested by the prince, Beethoven delayed delivery until 1824, as his creative mind was taken up with a project he had been cultivating since his time in Bonn, when, at the von Breuning home, he had been introduced to the works of Friedrich Schiller, and when he had briefly attended the lectures on the German philosopher Immanuel Kant at the University of Bonn, acquiring a volume of Schiller's poetry. Year after year, he had toyed with the idea of putting the poet's words to music, and by 1822, the idea of a symphony like no other was germinating in his mind. In 1817, the Harmony Society, or the Philharmonic Society of London, commissioned Beethoven to write a symphony. The composer entrusted his pupil and friend, Ferdinand Reis, who had resettled in London, to find out what the London Philharmonic would pay for such work. The offer was rather low, £50, but Beethoven accepted. And little did the London Philharmonic Society know that they had commissioned a work that was to redefine the style of the symphony forever. For various reasons, Beethoven would postpone a journey to London to present this work, the Ninth Symphony, which would, eventually, be premiered in Vienna. Restless and nomadic, Beethoven moved from one house to another, from the house in Limegrubengasse to the Schwarzpanier house, while composing this, which would be his undiscussed masterpiece. By 1824, the composition was complete. Beethoven was determined that this, his Ninth Symphony, would be different from all others. It would include the human voice amongst all the other orchestra instruments. And so potent would the orchestra be that a chorus of 90 was needed to balance the strength of the instruments. 4 soloists had to be found who could cope with the score that the composer imposed, like a tyrant over all the vocal organs, as Carolina Unger, the contralto, complained. Thank you. some bizarre twist of his mind, Beethoven decided he would premiere the work in Berlin. But when the music world of Vienna heard this, they implored him to, in no weak words, to premiere his work in the town which had been his home for so many years. They wrote, "We beg you to withhold no longer a performance of the latest masterwork of your hands. Do not any longer disappoint the general expectation. Do not allow your latest offspring someday to appear as a foreigner in its place of birth, introduced perhaps by persons to whom you and your mind are alien. Appear soon amongst your friends, your admirers, your venerators." With these words of admiration and flattery, 30 or so musicians from Vienna convinced Beethoven to present his ninth in Vienna. After much controversy exactly as to where and when, the date was set for 7th May 1824 at the Karteneroth Theater. The conductor was to be Herr Umlauf, but Beethoven expected to be on stage to indicate the tempos himself. This put the orchestra in a difficult situation, and the whole thing risked being a proper muddle. Unseen by Beethoven, Umlauf made the sign of the cross over the orchestra, and raising his arms had their attention, while Beethoven, who by now was completely deaf, stood in front of the conductor's stand, and in the words of one of the musicians, threw himself back and forth like a madman. At one moment he stretched to his full height, and at the next he crouched down to the floor. He flailed about with his hands and feet as though he wanted to play all the instruments and sing all the chorus parts. And yet, it was magic on the opening chords when the audience fell silent, holding their breath. They had the privilege of being the first to hear the theme that was to become famous, the theme Schiller's poetry had inspired, the Ode to Joy.
Beethoven's Ode to Joy, the last movement in the Ninth Symphony, was another example of Beethoven setting Schiller's poetry to music. The striking and innovative piece, which still resonates as our European anthem today, was an amazing achievement by the composer to create and design a fitting setting for a poem by Schiller. This piece reflects the poet's wishes, as expressed in a letter to Gottfried Körner, that music must never paint in words and surrender itself to petty game playing, but rather it must follow the spirit of the poetry in its entirety. This is in sharp contrast to Goethe's ideas. He believed that music must fit the words perfectly, just like a well-fitted glove.
When Umlauf brought his arms down for the final chord, the audience leapt to their feet, cheering and shouting, "Beethoven! Beethoven!" Beethoven, oblivious to all this, his back to the audience, continued to wave his arms, conducting the orchestra in his head. Gently, Contralto Unger nudged him and turned him to face the jubilant audience. Many had tears in their eyes. Beethoven could now dedicate time to composing the quartets that he had promised Prince Galitzin. Through many of these weekly episodes of Beethoven, His Life and Times, we have seen how Beethoven's family life interfered very heavily with his personal and artistic life. In a way, it might be said that he was to blame, because he took it upon himself to carry much responsibility. He interfered with his two brothers' lives, wanting to decide what career they were to take up, who and when they were to marry. Although he was famous, there were times when he had to swallow his pride and borrow money from them, and yet he despised them. His efforts had been unsuccessful with both his brothers, who went ahead and actually married the women they chose for themselves. And he had also failed with his one and only nephew, Karl, who he looked upon as a son, and for whose custody he had fought an endless legal battle against Karl's mother, Johanna. In desperation, Karl had attempted suicide and sought refuge with his much berated mother. Of course, his uncle insisted that he leave his mother's residence, but Karl wrote, as we read it in these conversation notes, "I do not want to hear anything that is derogatory of her. It is not for me to judge. If I were to spend even a little time here with her, it would only be small compensation for all that she has suffered on my account." Convalescence, Beethoven gave in, somewhat, to Karl's insistence for joining the army, and an interview was arranged with Field Marshal von Stutenheim. But there was a significant obstacle. The gunshot had left a visible scar on Karl's forehead, and this had to heal properly before he could attempt the interview. Very reluctantly, therefore, Beethoven accepted his brother Johann's invitation to spend some time with Karl in Johann's country estate in Gneischendorf, on the banks of the Danube, between Vienna and Linz. As we have already learnt in a previous episode of this series, Johann had made a fortune selling medical supplies to the French invaders. He had become wealthy and was now a landowner, and he was only too pleased with the opportunity of showing off his success to his famous brother, who, on the contrary, lived in rented accommodation in Vienna. In fact, Beethoven seems to have lived in appalling conditions. We are told that when Gioacchino Rossini visited him in Vienna in 1822, he was shocked to find the composer living in squalor, in an attic that was wet, disorderly, and dirty. While in Vienna, Rossini, much admired for his highly successful Barbiere di Siviglia, had the opportunity of meeting high society people at dinner in Chancellor Metternich's home. He pointed out to them that it was a shame that they allowed their great musical genius to live in such squalor. They retorted that it was no use trying to help the great composer, as Beethoven paid no heed, and he lived as he chose. Let us take a break now and listen to the overture of Rossini's opera buffa, Il Barbiere di Siviglia, for which Beethoven praised him, suggesting that the Italian composer ought to only concentrate on this type of opera, most congenial, according to the German composer, to the Italians. Next week, we will be with Beethoven and his nephew Karl on their journey to Gneisendorf. Having reached the end of this episode of Beethoven, His Life and Times, I wish to thank Dr. Sandra Dingley for her intervention.